Search Around.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to episode 108 of the Tuesday Night Comics podcast. I'm not going to say 108 because I feel like that kind of glosses over the fact that we have over 100 episodes of this, and it's a source of amazement for me every week. I'm Billy, and that voice you hear laughing is Dave.
Hey, guys.
And how are you doing this week, Dave?
Oh, pretty good. You know, we were snowed in. I watched a lot of TV.
Yeah, you survived Captain Cold's attack on the East Coast.
Yeah, my name is Jonas the Storm. we got about like a foot and a half, I guess, or maybe two. We got around like 20 inches or 18. It's hard to tell with all the wind blowing around. You're like, well, this spot is like 14. This spot is 27.
Totally. According to the Central Park totals, New York City had its second highest snowfall since like 1860 something.
Wow. And
the highest snowfall actually came in like 2003, and we missed it by a tenth of an inch.
Huh.
And I remember I was dating my wife at that time, and we were like all the roads were shut down. I could not get home. So my car was just like plowed in. Like, I lived at her place for like a week because of that. And I remember we would walk to Blockbuster Video every night and like get a new movie, and then walk to McDonald's and get like, you know, number ones and number twos. And so much has changed since then, because what's Blockbuster Video? And I haven't eaten McDonald's in like a decade.
That's funny.
Yeah. DC's Legends of Tomorrow. This is going to be like a Legends of Tomorrow episode, because we watched the first episode, and we are doing a little Rip Hunter action on the Tuesday Night Book Club this week.
Right.
With Time Master's Vanishing Point, The Search for Batman.
So do you want to get into like some Rip Hunter and Legends of Tomorrow talk?
Not quite yet, because I want to know what the hell is going on at DC Comics. Are they doing a new 52?
It's, I guess so.
They announced that a bunch of things are going to be renumbered. Like, everything's going to be renumbered. And this is where if any books that survived from the first wave of the new 52 will be hitting their 52nd issue this summer. And then they will be renumbered after that.
Huh.
And it looks like it's going to be much more of a film and TV show tie-in as far as like origins and costume design is concerned.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it.
I have mixed feelings about it too, in that I'm fine with them relaunching and renumbering if they're going back to pre-Flashpoint continuity and costume design.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the thing that's like kind of cool is like, you know, when we're talking week by week, we're like, how come like DC doesn't have a Supergirl comic, you know, and we're, how come like, you know, this doesn't look like it does in the movies. If anybody came to the comics right now, they'd be like, what's going on? You know,
why is everybody wear armor?
Right. And so there's a point where I'm like, yeah, like I could see like, you know, you tweaking your artwork to kind of go along with whatever's in the film or TV right at that point, because like it's just an easier entryway. But you know, and I think when we look at Marvel, I think they kind of do it a little bit more in an organic way, and DC has not been doing it at all. Or if they do it, they do it like after the fact, like, oh gosh, Supergirl's doing like really good, let's do a webcomic, hurry.
Right.
And it seems like kind of like, you know, just like, you know, like they've half-assed it kind of. And so like now it seems like it's almost too much, you know, like nobody wants to read comics that are, you know, the movies and TV just as comics, you know. I think Marvel does something really nice where they like kind of, you know, match up when the movies align a little bit with those certain characters. Like Captain America's coming back. Steve Rogers. Thanks. I kept wanting to say Steve Trevor, but I was like, that's Wonder Woman.
I heard a just sound coming out of your mouth. I was like, that's Steve Jobs.
So now he's coming back as Captain America, and he's going to be young again, sort of the old stuff. And, you know, so that's a good timing. When his movie was not out, like, they had Falcon as Captain America. He's still Captain America. And, you know, he's running around doing his own thing, doing their own series. And that's great. Like, and they really come up with new ideas and new stories that, you know, that the films are definitely mining. It's, you know, like almost like research and development for the films. And so I think that... that, you know, you can't do it like, okay, now we're all the same. And then, you know, is it going to fall apart? What's going to happen? I don't know. But we don't even know what it's going to look like, but I would love it to be my job.
And DC has done that with costume design. I feel like after the new 52, Green Arrow in particular, was done to look much more like the TV show Arrow.
I disagree.
Like, oh, really?
The new 52, when it first started, he had these like awful mutton chops, these Blue Beetle goggles, and like looked nothing like the Stephen Amell character. It was only when like maybe like 15 issues into the series where Jeff Lemire took over, and then... Gotcha. He kind of like did his own thing / lined it up with the TV show a little bit, just because he was like, well, you know, like, it's a popular TV show. Maybe we should, you know, capitalize on that.
Yeah, I guess I just got hung up on like spiky hair and no goatee. And I was like,
right. Yeah.
I'm like, it's Stephen Amell. But yeah, that's true. They did give him like, you know, green armor. Like, he was wearing basically like a baseball catcher's like chest plate. Because he was wearing armor, but as a vest.
It was a very not like, and that green and the Arrow costume that first season was very like, you know, like leather, like, you know, right. Hood, very basic, you know, and that new 52 costume was anything but basic.
Yeah.
Which, and that's, I think you could say about every new 52 costume.
That's exactly what I was going to say. High collar and not basic. As many lines as possible.
Yeah.
Plates and plates and plates. So I don't know. This is, and what's crazy about it too is that, you know, when the new 52 launched, basically Batman and Green Lantern were both doing so well that their continuities weren't messed with as much as everybody else's. Sure, like, Tim Drake was no longer Robin. It was a whole Red Robin thing. And they, you know, de-aged Batman too. But as far as like storylines went, it seemed like everything previously had happened, at least, you know, at the start of the new 52. It wasn't it wasn't like he was coming in fresh the way they were presenting Superman and some of the other characters.
Right.
I've been Green Lantern too. And now Green Lantern looks like it might be nowhere to be seen when this Rebirth launches, which is a shame, because like, it was really like the crown jewel of like DC Comics for a long time while Geoff Johns was at the helm of the title.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's gonna be like endless speculation.
Oh, of course. And that happened with the new 52 also.
Yeah, and I think we should just call it pre-birth, you know. you know what we should do? We should like do something like we come up with our versions of the DC universe.
Oh, that would be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Like we pick out the titles, like 52 titles, what we would want. And either we post it online or do an extra episode or something like that.
Right. Yeah, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I just have 52 titles of Zan and Gina.
See, if I had that directive, I would probably put the Wonder Twins in.
No, yeah, no, me too. Totally.
You know, not front and center. Like, I don't know if I'd give them their own title.
I'd put them in the Justice League.
But I think I would, you know, like, I would stick them in the Omega Men.
Like, I would give them the respect they're due.
Yeah, and then I would stick them in the Omega Men where nobody would buy them.
Yeah, wow. Like, I would put them front and center. I'd put them in a place where nobody would see them.
Yeah, I just crushed the Omega Men. And
people would see them less if they had no series at all. I mean, people would see them less as if they had no series at all.
Yeah, I knew what you meant.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah. So. Well, I guess we'll see what that is. So we've got a little bit till we get to 52. And then we'll see what, you know, what the afterbirth is.
Oh, please. DC afterbirth.
I think that's a hashtag we need to start.
I think we do. I think you're right. And also coming from DC, we talked about the bloodlines
never forget. Bloodlines never forget.
Yeah, on Twitter last week, Dan DiDio did not want to give us credit for reinvigorating bloodlines in the DC universe.
I don't know why, Dan.
Why don't you give us a JT Cruel or Krull? Do we know how to pronounce this last
name? I think it's Cruel. Yeah. I think it would be cool to be Cruel.
Yeah, well, I would say that JT was very kind to actually, you know, respond on our Facebook page and said he hoped that we were excited for it. And that actually, now that he responded, I kind of am more excited about it. Reading the interview he gave Newsrama makes it sound much cooler than the original event.
Yeah, when he responded to your post on Facebook, the one thing that I loved about your post was A, that your dad like posted amazing.
Right.
You know, like,
my dad does not read comic books.
But you know, he's supporting his son. And then after JT posted, his dad's like, tell him, son, you're the best. Yeah. We love you. I'm like, wow, this is like dad's like hitting it up on Facebook hard.
Yeah, I was hoping your dad would join Facebook.
He's like, I heard there's a plethora of dads on Facebook cheering on their sons.
I think your mom actually shared that post, so it might have worked out.
I believe that my mom would have. But that Newsarama interview was awesome.
Yeah, totally.
My favorite thing was that he was like, the costume design is going to be very 90s. Lots and lots of pouches.
Yeah, pouches. Pouches for days. I was excited about that. And then the last bit of news this week, which is huge in my mind, indie favorite comic Copra by Michel Fife is now on Comixology.
And me and Michel, we've had like kind of a standoff here because he has publicly said that he would never, you know, put this out in digital format. And
yes.
I specifically said that I would never read it. Unless it was in a digital format. And I guess we all know who won that fight.
Yeah.
So
Dave won, Michel zero.
Exactly.
This is what happens, like, you know, it's like when fans try to figure out, well, what if the Juggernaut got into a fight with the Blob? It's the unmovable object versus the unstoppable force. Like, who wins?
And right.
I don't know which one of those is you, but you won. And the first issue is only 99 cents, and the first six issues are on there now. The other five are $1.99 each. And he said on Twitter that he, or Facebook, I forget which, that he's going to he has the first six out right now, which makes up the first trade, and then he's going to be adding them on a regular basis until it's caught up with the ongoing series.
Oh, awesome. And yeah. I'm really excited to read it, and also take credit for it being on Comixology. Much like how we got Bloodlines back at DC.
We are Dave and I are movers and shakers in the industry, people.
Right, yeah. It reminds me of, I was listening to the NPR politics podcast, mm-hmm. and Hillary Clinton made some reference that she had helped, you know, move along the process of the governor of Flint asking for help with their water problem, you know, with lead in their water, because she had said that he should do that. And, you know, the interviewer asked, like, you know, her, you know, do you really think that you had influence there? And she's like, well, she's like, as the saying goes, a turtle didn't get on top of a fence post by itself.
What? That is not a saying.
And apparently this, then like they went into this whole like thing where like apparently, because the interviewer was talking about it on this politics podcast, and he was saying that that was the thing that Bill Clinton said all the time too. And like, I guess like in that area, like in Arkansas, like that is like a saying.
In the
like,
Clinton household, that's a saying.
And someone was like, can you explain it to us? And he's like, well, because a turtle can't climb a fence pole. And I was like, well, I and then they were like, you know, it's pretty obvious, but yeah. I just thought it was funny.
Like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, turtle can't climb a fence pole.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, that's kind of funny because, you know, at that point when it's all over the media, do you really think what Hillary Clinton said did anything? So
right.
Much like, did we really do anything with bloodlines?
Well,
and Dave, the answer is yes.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I'm gonna adopt that phrase now. Hey, turtle can't just get, who puts turtles on fence poles?
I don't know. Shredder?
What is going on in Arkansas that people are that bored? Like, oh well, you know, turtle didn't get a fence pole itself, but okay, that answer, that asks a bigger question. Well, wait, why would anybody do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it for news this week. Next week we're going to try to get to the bottom of that phrase. but for now, let's talk Legend of Tomorrow. Did you watch it?
I did. I liked it a lot.
I actually, despite, you know, being snowed in and all that this whole weekend, I did not get a chance to watch the whole episode. I watched about half of the first episode right before this podcast started. And I enjoyed it for the most part.
My favorite parts were the Atom.
Yeah, my favorite parts were the Firestorm parts and any scene with Arthur Darvill in it. Like, Arthur Darvill to me steals the show. And I was happy to see Victor Garber playing Dr. Martin Stein, because I loved him as Eli Gold's boss, or Eli Stone's boss on Eli Stone.
I think a couple great things were that the Adam's reason for being there, you know, just wanting to be something big, right, which, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, his power is to get small. And I think, you know, that actor is a phenomenal actor.
Yeah. Brendan Routh, right?
Yeah. And, you know, he really helped push those scenes above, I think, what they could have been in a lesser actor's hands. I love that, you know, they're making a Rip Hunter, like almost like the Doctor Who of the DC universe here.
Totally.
Even with the Time Masters being much like the Time Lords. The stuff with the Hawks, when you get to the end of the episode, it's really a nice little arc they take those two characters on, especially Kendra, Hawk Girl. And oh, nice. Outside of the scene where Ray Palmer is talking to Green Arrow about, you know, why he needs to go and why he wants to go, and the twist at the end that plays into that, I loved that Captain Cold, Heat Wave, and White Canary were like, we're in the 70s, let's go to a bar. And they get into a bar fight. That was the most fun scene of them all. And I also enjoyed that they had a Adam's arch nemesis, Kronos, there. A little bit different of a version of Kronos than you would see in the comics, but I'm glad that they always are like, well, we need a villain. Let's pull from the comics and Kronos. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So I definitely suggest people watch this. And if you watch Flash and Arrow, you're going to like it so much more. If not, I think it's still pretty accessible.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't like about the episode was, it's funny because, you know, going into this, I was familiar with most of the, like half the actors, Brandon Routh, Victor Garber, Dominic Purcell, Wentworth Miller, and Arthur Darvill. Did I say Arthur Darvill? Anyway, so those five are the ones that like I'd known about going in, seen them in other stuff. And Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell played brothers on Prison Break. And I thought they were good on that show. Like the show, first couple of seasons were good, and then it quickly went downhill. But man, the two of them in this episode could not have overacted more. Like Dominic Purcell kind of like yells every line as Heatwave. And Wentworth Miller sounds like Super Friends cartoon Lex Luthor. Like he sounds like he's trying to be a conniving villain. And like, you know, I feel like they should give him a mustache just so he could twirl it with every line.
Yeah, yeah. I like Wentworth Miller's Captain Cold just a little more because I feel like it's an act.
Okay, gotcha.
And so like you see when you see his real personality come through, I think it's when like he looks at the kid who's playing the other half of Firestorm. I can't remember his name.
Only Friends Drama is
the actor. I forget what his name is on the show.
Yeah,
but he's like, I said you weren't coming and you're not coming. And like it was just like that's when he lets down his guard and you see who he really is like a guy who's like true to himself. And you know, that's when he's not doing is like, well, you know, this is what I think. And he definitely does that like Kevin Spacey doing Lex Luthor or Gene Hackman doing Lex Luthor. But you also see that he's doing it in like, I think in the context of the show, I think you'll see that he's doing it as a front. That's not really his character.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason why it plays for me. But I know what you mean. And I had that same feeling when he appeared on Flash for the first time.
Okay. Like, yeah, Flash, see here what I'm going to do.
All right, coppers.
I was like, what are you doing? Please stop.
So I definitely really enjoyed the show, and I think people will like it.
Yeah, I will say this. I definitely enjoyed Arthur Darvill as Rip Hunter more than I've enjoyed Rip Hunter in any comic book I've ever read him in before.
Yeah, I agree. Do you want to talk about the Rip Hunter books that we read?
Yeah. So let's go into the Tuesday Night Comics Book Club. And this week we're talking about Time Master's Vanishing Point, The Search of Batman, which is available as a collection and also individually as a 6-issue and limited series. Now this came out back in 2011. So it was like shortly before Flashpoint and right around the time of like Grant Morrison bringing Batman back post Final Crisis, right?
Right. So Final Crisis happens, Darkseid kills Batman. Everybody thinks Batman's dead. Then you find out that these beams that Darkseid hit Batman with sent him back into the past. And there was a mini series that Grant Morrison wrote, something like Bruce Wayne does something or other. And basically it's Bruce Wayne jumping throughout time forward and forward until he reaches the spot where he is supposed to be. And then alongside that was this series written by Dan Jurgens where Booster Gold, Rip Hunter, Superman, and Green Lantern are like, let's go find Batman. We know what happened to him. And you're like, all right, let's do it. And then like immediately they get off course.
Yeah.
And they're in like some obscure DC characters world timeline. I don't even know who this guy is. Like that's how obscure this guy is. Claw,
the Conan the Barbarian character.
It was like you know how like the Warlord series on Scartaris?
Yeah.
You know how that is like C-list characters. This guy's like a Z-list version of that.
Yeah, and Claw the Unconquered first appeared in Claw the Unconquered number one, which came out in 1975, created by David Michelinie, writer, and Ernie Chan, artist. And surprise, surprise, Claw the Unconquered. Like, if you look at the cover of it, it is clearly a Conan. Like, you know, it's DC did not have the rights to Conan. Marvel did, so they're doing their own Conan series.
Ah, gotcha. So yeah, so this series was like such a weird series for DC to put on sale this week too, with the Legends of Tomorrow. There's some good bits in there where you learn about like Rip Hunter's past and who his father is and how he learned how to cover up who he was. But outside of that, like, not good.
No, not good at all. It just seems. I remember when it came out and they announced it, and I was just like, this looks just like a cash grab for people who are really into the Grant Morrison series looking to get like a little more. Right. And just for Dan Jurgens to play in like the Dan Jurgens toy box of his version of Superman, and he's the creator of Booster Gold. But I, like, this series made me realize that while Dan Jurgens created Booster Gold, like, it's J.M. DeMatteis who, really, to me, is the writer of Booster Gold, because it's the Giffen DeMatteis Justice League where Gold really shines.
Right. And if you like Legends of Tomorrow and like Rip Hunter, I would suggest buying Booster Gold by Jeff Johns with art by Dan Jurgens.
Mm.
And that runs into like similar themes that they're playing with here about like people remembering you and what they remember you for, and what you have to sacrifice to be a hero, especially a hero in time.
Mm, that's a good point.
But none of that has to do with Rip Hunter. But themes and, you know, story-wise, he's there, but it doesn't focus on it. But it matches much, much closer to DC's Legends of Tomorrow. I was on a Rip Hunter kick this week. I also read Time Masters from 1990.
I almost bought that too, because that was also on sale as part of the sale. And I just, the only reason I did is because I knew I wouldn't have time to read it.
Well, it was a great premise.
Okay. What's the premise?
So basically, Rip Hunter figures out that, whatchamacallit? That the Illuminati have been doing horrible things.
Throughout Mr. Fantastic, the Submariner.
No.
Black Bolt and Black Panther and Professor X and Tony Stark.
Think Illuminati and more like Dan Brown's Illuminati.
Ah, gotcha.
From Da Vinci.
Mr. Fantastic.
So it's kind of like a little bit. Does a little bit of that like Da Vinci Code stuff, before the Da Vinci Code, and he's got to, you know, stop these guys from doing horrible things in time to stop them. I forget what it was that he had to stop, but basically he had to stop the Illuminati, and you find out Vandal Savage is the guy who's, you know, pulling the strings throughout time. So it was interestingly written, and, you know, there was some things about it that, like, they were trying to make it edgy for edgy's sake, which was a little weird, and the writing wasn't great, but the premise was good, and it did not need 8 issues. And Rip Hunter comes off awful in the series. Like, he just comes off like a jerk. And it wasn't that great either.
I feel like Rip Hunter comes off as a, like, is he supposed to be a jerk? Because, like, he came off as a jerk in this series too.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is a little bit in that, like, he's like, okay, we're here to fix time. Like, he's not like a likable character. He's the guy, you know, I think he's as likable as the Doctor, you know, like the Doctor's there. The
Doctor's
to do
extremely likable.
Well, I mean, he is, but like in certain aspects, he's not very likable. Like the David Eccleston, I don't think he's like the most like likable Doctor if you met him. You know what I mean?
Okay, fair enough.
And I would point to that version of the Doctor of who Rip Hunter is more than any of the other doctors. The only book that I really enjoyed Rip Hunter was Time Warp. And it was a Vertigo collection of just various time stories.
And I remember that when it first came out. That was like an $8 comic. Yeah, I bought that.
Yeah, and Damon Lindelof did a story with Jeff Lemire doing art, and it was great.
Yeah, that book is fantastic. I definitely recommend people buying that.
Yeah, so if somebody wants, you know, to read a good Rip Hunter story, go find that Time Warp book. And then the rest of the stories in there are just as great. And it has a ton of like time travel stories that I think people would really enjoy. I don't know why they didn't put that on sale. But the one thing after reading this and watching, you know, Legends of Tomorrow, I thought to myself, I'm like, Rip Hunter's namesake to me always sounded like it was like a ripoff of, no pun intended, of Rip Van Winkle.
Oh, interesting.
And why is there, and it would be like great to see a story where, you know, Rip Hunter is like a guy who creates a time machine. He falls asleep and it like explodes or something. And he wakes up like, you know, 40 years in the future to see that his wife's gone. And, you know, all that are left is his daughter who, you know, was a baby when he was, you know, had the time machine has blown up. So you basically parallel your Rip Van Winkle story, except when he, you know, now he's a scientist and he knows how to time travel and he has the ability to, and when he goes to rectify it, you realize that it's a point in time, a fixed point in time. You know, maybe you have like somebody like Vandal Savage like killing off his family and he can't do anything. So now he's like searching for a hole or a rip in time where he could find a loophole into it. Meanwhile, under the disguise of like saying that he is trying to fix these holes in time. So DC, right here.
Hire Dave.
Yeah, that's what I would do with a Rip Hunter series.
That's your pitch right there. Yeah,
that's my pitch. Yeah, but
yeah, and that Jeff Lemire, David Lindelof issue, that was not as part of this Legends of Tomorrow, so, right?
No, that's what I was saying. I'm shocked that it wasn't, because that's the best Rip Hunter story that I could point someone to.
Yeah. And I do like some of the other things they put on sale then. I picked up all of Salvation Run, which I never read, and I picked up Sword of the Atom, which I've always been like fascinated by. It was only a 4-issue limited series, but there's something about the Atom like fighting mice and snakes, and that on the covers he's fighting mice and snakes and alligators and like saving, you know, these miniature princesses, but it's the Atom with a sword and like a loincloth but over his Atom costume.
Yeah, I loved that series. My dad had bought my dad's favorite superhero was the Atom. Gotcha. Or is the Atom. And so he had most of the Silver Age run, so I've read all of that. And he had the Sword of Atom, and he had Power of the Atom, which followed that. And the best part of that series is just gorgeous Gil Kane artwork.
Yeah.
And Gil Kane created the Atom back in the Silver Age. And gotcha. His artwork in the 80s is just like so much cooler and dynamic,
right?
And you know, you realize like what a fantastic artist Gil Kane is, you know. Not that he wasn't in the Silver Age, but you know that he's something that someone who could grow with styles,
right? Like was able to change with the times.
Yeah
But yeah, that Time Masters Vanishing Point series, like, I made the decision not to buy that when it first came out, and I think I made the right decision back then. Time Masters, but you have overtaken Batman and Robin. All-Star Batman and Robin is my least favorite of the books we've read so far.
Right, because as bad as that was, it was interesting.
Yeah, that's
this was true. Boring. And I think that's what I was saying last week. At least, like, you know, Frank Miller fails interestingly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. It's much worse to be boring than to not be good.
Right.
Like, I'm like, ah, oh, this is not very good, but it's some good art, you know, like it's got some funny lines in it.
Yeah.
This Time Master's Vanishing Point, I was like, oh, I feel like I'm sitting through a physics lecture by someone who doesn't know physics. like if someone who didn't teach high school physics was giving you a high school physics class, that's what those issues sounded like. And so much of it was repetitive. Like it just, it reminded me of like a 1980s comic in that it would, that each issue would repeat like what happened in the previous issue in the first few pages. And like,
yeah,
you know, and the characters, like he just, Dangers did not capture Hal Jordan at all. Like Hal Jordan is this like stoic, like stick in the mud guy in this series. And I do like that Booster Girl like pointed out at some point, like when they're like, Justice League should, like Hal Jordan's like, Justice League should never let you in. He's like, oh yeah, because you wouldn't want somebody who like has a bunch of mistakes in their past. And I was like, yeah, you should have just said blew up Coast City. Or like, or killed Oligarch. He didn't blow up Coast City, I'm sorry. You know, blew up Oa and like killed all the Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
Like, oh, try to resurrect Coast City with his light constructs. Like, I would rather have Booster Gold on my team than that wackadoodle.
Oh, wait, destroy the time stream. Remember, that's what Hal Jordan did.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, Hal Jordan also caused Zero Hour.
Also like, written by Dan Jurgens.
Why would you recruit him onto a mission to like save the time stream? Oh, I know why, because Green Lantern was DC's best-selling book at that time alongside Batman. Sorry, went on a little rant there. I don't even know what I just said for like the last 3 minutes. I just like saw red and like it's just coming out.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? Yeah, so I actually, I didn't read anything else this week, but I did see the movie Batman Bad Blood. I went to the premiere of that got to interview Yvonne Strahovski from, you might remember her from Chuck
and yes.
Dexter. She is super nice. And also Sean Marr from Firefly. He played River Song's brother, you know, the doctor on the Serenity ship.
Oh, yeah.
So he plays Nightwing, has played Nightwing for the last three Batman movies, and she plays Batwoman. And so we've got a lot of the Bat family in this one. It's Batman goes missing, so Damian, Nightwing, Batwoman, and Batwing, not the Batwing from Africa, but the Batwing who's the son of Morgan Freeman's character.
I have the second Batwing.
Yeah. And Smash Williams plays him.
Cool.
Yeah. So he was not at the premiere, but got to hang out with some of the people who were in the movie. They were super nice. I interviewed them. That's not going to go up on this week's episode of the podcast, but it will go up, I think, when the movie comes out, which is going to be in early February.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to tack that on at the end of one of our episodes.
And so how did you like the movie?
I loved it. This was actually written by J.M. DeMatteis. Directed by Jay Oliva, who's directed a lot of the DC animated movies of the past few years. And the two of them, along with character designer Phil Barassa, did a great job. And all the voice actors did a great job, too. I think this is the best of the, you know, post-New 52 DC animated movies.
Cool.
Yeah, really, really good. Like, top-notch. And I recommend it to everybody once it does come out.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I'll definitely be taking a look.
Yeah, and before we do 20, why don't we talk about what you read this week?
Well, I read Dr. Fate number 8, it was really good. It was like a downtime issue after his big origin story and Khalid and his father talk, and he's going around helping different people throughout the world, and he's, you know, trying to figure out how to be Dr. Fate.
Gotcha.
And it was really nice, and you just saw like what a good family life he has, and how good his parents are, which is funny because I also read Fate number 15, and it goes into how horrible Jared Stevens' parents were.
Oh, really?
Which is funny how that lined up. But it's also interesting. This, I think, is where Dr. Fate, this new series, has somewhat veered off from how Fate was being written. And after his origin story, Fate then was visited by the DC magic people at that time, and they were like, "You're a jerk," and he's like, "I'm a jerk, and I'm cool though, but I hate my wife's ex-wife's cooking." You know, like the same, like weird badass things that you know. And so, like, it was definitely playing to what was popular at the time, but
hating your ex-wife's cooking.
Well, trying to be like cool, like, and edgy.
Yeah, tough and not caring.
Yeah, yeah, like, exactly.
Like Ethan Hawke's character in Singles. I hate that movie because, you want to know why? Spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen Singles, she doesn't pick Ben Stiller, who's got like the good job and isn't like mentally abusive, but goes after Ethan Hawke because he's the artist. And like, give me a break. Like, oh, I'm not going to pick him because he's the guy in the suit. He's in the suit because he, like, has a well-paying job and, like, grooms himself instead of your patchouli stinking boyfriend that you pick instead.
Right.
That movie. Sorry. Again, sorry, Red. What were we talking about? You were talking about Fate, and then I kind of blank for the last minute.
But I think the thing in Dr. Fate that does match up is that you go and look at like Ms. Marvel, which I feel like is a very popular series at like right now, this time. And I think that it's being modeled a little bit after that, you know, like she has really good parents that who care about her. And I think that's what you see here too. And so, I definitely recommend it. It's a great series. If you haven't read it, definitely check it out. Other than that, I read Titans Hunt numbers 1 and 2. They just recently dropped $1 on Comixology. There's more than that out right now. I think there's like 2 more issues out, like 3 and 4 probably are out. The writer is Dan Abnett, and it's got some great art by Geraldo Borges and Paulo Segura. And the inks and colors are by Hi-Fi. And this book, we were actually just talking about it this morning when we were talking about this Rebirth stuff from DC that we talked at the beginning of the podcast about. And I shared with you an article about on Bleeding Cool about how Titans are showing how like continuity is changing in DC for some reason, and in this Titans Hunt book. And we were just like, oh man, we both really wanted to read this book after seeing a couple of panels. And so I was like, hey, you know what, I'm gonna check out the ones that are like the lower price right now and see if I like it. And there was 2 on sale, and I read it at lunch, and man, was it good.
Oh, nice.
Great story. Dan Abnett has a great feel for these characters. We see Aqualad, Dick Grayson, Roy Harper, and Donna Troy, as well as Mal Duncan, Bumblebee, and Narc. Oh, and Lilith too, also known as Omen, Lilith Clay. And Narc is like surprisingly the entry point to the series, and he's like the heart of the series, I think. If this is paving the way to DC's rebirth, well, I hope Dan Abnett is rebirthing the DC universe, because this is a great story. I'm enjoying it so far. Like, all the Titans characters are like having flashes of knowing each other, but they don't know why. If you're a DC Comics fan, you know that all these characters were the original sidekicks and team characters of the DC universe. Right. The only one who's missing here is Wally West, Kid Flash.
Huh. And that's just, you think that's because of like how they recreated Wally West in the New 52?
Maybe. I think we'll see how that all ends up, but I wouldn't count them out yet.
Yeah, because, and this is like on the cover of number two, there's, you know, Dick Grayson looks like he's being like pulled down underwater, and then we see Speedy, I'm guessing that's Aqualad on the right. But who's is that Donna Troy in like the top right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, it's funny. Like it looks like she's in her Troya costume, but that's actually just water droplets. That's on like the silhouette. And so I was like, oh wait. So wow, that's like hardcore Donna Troy if they bring back Troya.
Well, Donna Troy has appeared in Wonder Woman, David, what's his name?
Finch.
Yes, his run.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I have not read his run at all. That series kind of ended for me when Brian Azzarello left the book.
Me too. So, but that's all I read this week.
Okay. It was weird, you know, considering that we had a blizzard. I didn't get a lot of time to read comic books. We did have our baby shower though, and I got the cutest Batgirl onesie for my future daughter. And I'm super excited about that.
That's awesome.
It's like a uniform onesie. Like it's got like a utility belt and like, you know, like the bat symbols where the bat symbol should be. It doesn't have a cape, which is probably for the best because I feel like that's a suffocation hazard. But at the same time, I kind of wish it had a cape. I was like, oh man, I gotta get a like Burt Ward Robin costume to wear alongside this.
That's, you know, funny.
With, like the pantyhose and everything.
Well, obviously.
Obs, as the kids like to say. Yeah. So, all right. Now let's finish up the episode with our 20. We're doing things a little out of order this episode, but hey, that's the kind of episode you could do when you're a mover and a shaker in the comic book industry the way that Dave and I are.
Yeah, we get things done. Yeah. Hashtags bloodlines never forget, and hashtag I don't think wrote on Twitter about wanting Michelle Fife to put it digitally, but I still made a change.
Yeah, I'm sure he's listened to this podcast while he's like working on that excellent comic that I love so much. And I'm excited that like now you'll be able to read it. Although you've already read issue number one, right? Because he's had that like available for free on his website for some time now.
I don't think I've ever read it.
Okay. It's not available the way it is on like Comixology, but he has all the pages up there and you could, you know, read the first issue for free if you want, or if anybody wants, just go to michellefife.com, which is michelefife.com.
Oh, I think I started it, but then I was at work and then I did not.
You're like, I got to do work.
Yeah. So, your boss is
the thing. I was reading a comic book at work, but I stopped.
I'm sure it was on my lunch break.
I'm sure it was at your old job too.
Yeah, it was at my old job.
Not the kind of thing.
Where I was just reading comics all the time and nobody was ever, you know, seeing me do it.
Yeah. Take that, Brooklyn number one.
Hashtag, that's not true.
Hashtag, Brooklyn number one.
So what's in your 20?
My 20 is more like a 10 this week. I'm pulling a Dave, as I would call it.
Oh, you are pulling a Dave.
I wanted to get to $20. I wanted to get at least to like $18 even, you know, or even like $17. If I got to $16, I could have like been like, I couldn't find another $4 book to get it. But I couldn't do it, man. It was tough.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it's three comics this week. All right, we've got Old Man Logan number one by Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino.
I'm right along with you.
It's Old Man Logan from the Mark Miller storyline, trying to change his future in our present. Jeff Lemire is currently writing him over in Extraordinary X-Men. I haven't read that, but you said it's been great. And I love Sorrentino's artwork. Like, I see this being a very spaghetti Western feel to it. So I'm excited for it. It's a $5 comic, but it's got extra pages. I think it's going to be really good.
Cool.
And Jeff Lemire is at the top of his game right now.
Yeah, he's writing some great stuff.
Yeah. Then over at Image, we've got Ringside number three by Joe Keating, writing with art by Nick Barber and Simon Goh. This book's been great so far. This is one of those Image comics that I'm afraid is not going to get enough press. And because these guys are not superstars doing an Image comic, that it's like they're going to run out of money at some point. Which is why I want everybody to buy Ringside number 3. It's like a crime noir set in the world of professional wrestling, but you know, set like in behind the scenes of professional wrestling. Yeah, so that's a really cool book for $4. It's great. And then finally, a $1 comic to bring me up to $10. True Believers Deadpool Variants number 1. No writer, all artists. This is a collection of Deadpool variant covers for $1. Like, usually Deadpool variant covers are pretty funny. And, you know, it's usually like various artists and someone has to be writing the copy on them, because it's usually like basically like every cover, it's like a one panel, like, you know, comic strip. So I'm excited to buy this. I actually want to take it with me around like New York Comic Con and Special Edition NYC and see if I could get it signed by as many people who worked on it as possible. Because a lot of people have done Deadpool variant covers over the years. And for $1, it's great. Marvel's doing a lot of like key Deadpool issues for $1 leading up to the movie. Like Disney and Fox are doing revenue share for this movie. So you're seeing a much bigger push from Marvel for Deadpool than you did with like, say, X-Men Days of Futures Past and the Fantastic Four movie.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my $10. That's my 10 this week.
Well, maybe I can, you know.
Yeah, maybe you could sway me.
Yeah. So in my 20 this week, and I have way more than 20.
Oh, okay. You can have some of my money then.
I left $14 on the table.
Wow.
Yeah. So Old Man Logan number 1, just like you. Right. Real excited for it. Also out this week is Extraordinary X-Men number 6 by Jeff Lemire, which
I didn't notice that was coming out. You know what? I'm so excited about Old Man Logan that I'd probably pick this up too.
And they're heading to Weird World too. And if you have been following along with our podcast, we were talking about Squadron Supreme, who at the end of last issue end up in Weird World.
Yeah, it's the new hot place in the Marvel Universe.
Apparently. So I've never heard of it, but now all the books I'm reading are ending up there. So I'm pretty excited for that. And the best part about the solicitation is that it says, this month, it's Mutants, Monsters, and Rhinosaurus. So, yeah, I'm excited for that.
I'm just picturing Rocksteady from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That might be accurate.
Yeah, I hope he's wearing an army helmet.
Yeah, that would be great. The next thing up is Aquaman number 48 by Cullen Bunn and Vincent Cifuentes, and it is the conclusion to Aquaman's story that Cullen Bunn's been writing. So I'm pretty excited to see what happens at the end of this. And then I know we get another team picking up Aquaman from here. And if it runs to 52, maybe at the jump on point of this rebirth, we will see that Geoff Johns and
Ivan Reis?
Yes, return to Aquaman for...
Gotcha.
What they've been teasing.
That's a good point.
Next up is Black Canary number 7. And I've really been enjoying this book. And I feel like it's not getting as much praise as Batgirl, but it's great. It's a band on the road with a lot of crazy stuff happening. Pick it up. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I haven't read any of that series. I bought the first trade in a Comixology sale. I got to get around to reading that.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. It's kind of like Birds of Prey meets Scott Pilgrim.
Gotcha.
The last book that rounds out my 22 and 19 is Justice League 3000 number 8 by Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, and Scott Collins. And I really loved when Scott Collins did the art on this book previously. I did like one issue, a couple issues ago, and I really, really liked it. And I think I preferred it over to Howard Porter, just because of Scott Collins' ability to create emotion in his characters' faces. This is where we finally get to see the all-female Justice League 3001. So I think that might sell you.
Yeah. No, actually, yeah, I am excited for that. I'm just a little behind on that book, is why it didn't end up on my list.
Right. So what I left on the table, I was going to say Cyborg. So I was getting ahead of myself. The table was Cyborg number 7. I'm really enjoying this book. Also Justice League of America number 7. Omega Man number 8. Minus the Wonder Twins. If the Wonder Twins is in it, it would have bumped it up. And Superman, Lois and Clark number 4, which we're also seeing like a lot of this weird continuity stuff that we're seeing in Titans Hunt in. And that's like an 8-issue miniseries, I believe. Mm-hmm. So they're at the midway point at number 4. And so that's about it.
Awesome. And speaking of... I don't know. just tried saying like 5 different thoughts at once and none of them worked. Awesome.
Do you mean left on the table?
Yes. Left on the table. Right. That sounds like Jeffrey Tambor for some reason in my head, but I don't know. Left on the tambour. So for next week, for the Tuesday night book club, now Lucifer is starting tonight.
You mean last night? Last night.
Tuesday the 26th.
Oh, is it Tuesday? I thought it was on Monday.
Oh, I thought it was on Tuesday. Huh. Well, if it was on Monday, I missed it, and I'll be watching it tonight.
Yes, I was planning on watching it on Hulu at some point this week, but I knew it was either today or...
It is a Monday show, you're right. Sorry, I missed it last night. My bad, Lucifer.
We'll get you in the next 3 days, don't worry.
Yeah, so here's a question. Should we read Lucifer Book 1, which is the first trade in the series that came out years and years ago? Or do we read Lucifer number 1 and 2 from the new Vertigo series, which I'm guessing will be more in line with the TV show?
I say we go new series.
I say we go new series too. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
So we'll read both. There are 2 issues out right now. We'll read both issues.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. Nice. It won't be a lot, and we'll see what's coming from Vertigo that's new.
Yeah, and this excites me because this, like, we might end up picking up a new series regularly out of this as opposed to reading something for, you know, the first volume of a series that's long gone.
Yeah, and also like 12 volumes.
Yeah.
Or some crazy number like that.
Yeah, that series did run for a long time. All right, so next week on the Tuesday Night Comics Book Club, if you want to read alongside, we're going to be reading Lucifer number 1 and number 2. And the creative team on that is Holly Black with art by Lee Garbett, who does the penciling and the inking. Lee Garbett's art a lot, so I'm excited for this. He has like a very like Tommy Lee Edwards kind of style, but a little like more cartoony. Like he does his backgrounds very Tommy Lee Edwards, but his people seem much more like animated. Yeah, it reminds me of the woman who drew as Lady Killer, Joelle Jones.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah. You just amped it up just a little bit. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. So we'll be reading both of those issues for next week. Do you have anything else, Dave?
No, that's it.
Yeah. So if we learned anything from this episode, it's that you can leave things on the table and do not read Time Master's Vanishing Point.
Or any book called Time Masters. Don't read it.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Time Masters is not a master of good fiction.
Time Warp, good. Time Warp number 1 from Vertigo. Go read it.
Yeah, as far as anthologies go, that was great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll see you guys next week. In the meantime, have an awesome Tuesday night.
And an excellent Time Warp. to next week.
Do you want to do the Time Warp again? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, next week.